Thank you. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank first the organizers for inviting me to this very nice meeting. And before going into the technical details of my presentation, I would like to mention a little bit what's this work, how this work fits in the research program we have at GERAD Montréal in data mining. I've been interested since at least 10 to 20 years in the changing role of computers in the mathematical sciences. That is, we have had several presentations here which showed us the great progress which has been done in computers, in algorithms, in softwares, and in programs which are available. But it seems to me that there's an equally important change in the use of computers within mathematics. That is, computers in mathematics were first used as number crunchers, as we all know, and then more recently we have a number of systems which help to do formal computations, who visualize the number of functions and so on. But the heart of mathematics, can be argued, is conjecturing, refuting, and proving. So what can the computer do in proof, conjecture, and refutation is the topic which we are looking at in Montreal. And we have looking at it from a practical point of view, connected with what is known as now experimental mathematics, which is a growing field, which is still a very minority field within mathematics, but which is a growing field. And regarding proofs, much progress has been made lately. That is, initially when AI began about 50 years ago, people believed that the computer would replace very rapidly the mathematician. They liked it or they feared it. And for instance, Herb Simon made a series of predictions in the late 50s about what the computers would do within 10 years. And one of them, it will propose and prove an important theorem. Another one was that it would beat the world champion in chess. A third one was that it would make music which would be interesting to musicians. And the fourth one was that it would take over the field in practical psychology. And, some things have not been quite as fast. That prediction about the computer beating the world champion of chess, of course, happened. It happened 40 years later, than not 10 years, than the prediction of Simon. But nevertheless, that's true. Regarding music, well, musicians are using computers quite a lot. Computers on their own can do music. It's said that if you feed a computer with music of Bach, and a number of rules deduced thereon, it can do music of the quality of the sons of Bach. Now, Bach had 20 children. Several were musicians, others were not, and it's not specified if it's which of the children of Bach it are referred to in this example. And, of course, psychology models are some are computer-based and some are not. And so a lot of promises were made, and initial general models for mathematical reasoning, based mostly on first-order logic and developments like that, were first rather deceptive. Not much new was done, and things have changed quite a bit in the last 10 years. For instance, McCoon was able to solve a problem, an open conjecture, which is that all Robinson algebras are Boolean algebras, and this conjecture, which was solved 10 years ago, was open for 63 years. Now, how did he do that? He had a set of rules, and he had the axioms and the results which he had to find out, and he generated, logically, more than 20,000 sentences, and finally found a proof of 16 sentences from the axioms to the results. This proof is Boolean algebra, so it's Boolean variables with complementation. However, it's a little bit deceptive to say it's 16 lines, because there can be up to several levels of complementation in the same formula. So the formula is understandable. It can be checked by the human, which is quite different from some other proofs in computer science. For instance, the proof of four-color theorem, which is partially automated. But as it's so complicated, it has been rewritten in a simpler language at least twice up to now. Now, so proofs, there are some progress. Conjectures, there are some progress also, and we have done quite a bit of work on doing that, on finding conjectures in graph theory by computer. My former student, now young colleague at HEC, Gilles Caporossi, built the system Autographics, which is working in the following way. You take a graph, and you take any formula relating graphical invariants. Say maximum degree, minimum degree, average degree, radius, diameter, index, matching, chromatic number, and so on and so forth. Now, for any of these formula, you can build a generic, you can build a generic algorithm which will optimize any of these formula. In other words, you can find, heuristically, of course, because it's quite a complicated problem, a series of graphs given any formula which you're interested in. And then you can use data mining techniques to analyze these graphs and in various ways obtain conjectures from these graphs. My other student, Mustafa Aushish, did this in his PhD thesis, in which he took 20 graph invariants and looked at 1,520 cases in which you had a formula taking one invariant, one of the four operations, the other invariant, and then trying to find lower bounding functions and upper bounding functions depending only on the number of vertices. And moreover, you would ask that these bounds be sharp. There were 1,520 cases. Results were obtained in all cases except 60, which were just too difficult. 850 conjectures were proved automatically by the system. They were very easy cases. Over 300 were proved by various mathematicians, and more than 2,000 papers have been written on the topic up to now. So that's one area which works well. And then there's the area in between, in which you cannot have a complete proof because it's too difficult, which is true for many, many fields of mathematics. Yet you can help in some ways. And the work I'm going to speak about now, which was done with Charles Audet of École Polytechnique, who is also working in pattern search and nonlinear programming, and Frédéric Messine from University of Toulouse, is on some problems of geometry, in which what turns out is that you can the simple problems on so small polygons, happen to be too difficult to be solved completely by global optimization or by some other mathematical programming technique, but they're also too difficult to be solved by pure geometry. And so there's some combination of both which has to be used if you want to get to a solution. So we're going to look at polygons, and we're going to define attributes of a polygon, and then consider a series of classes of extremal problems, taking two attributes, area versus perimeter, perimeter versus diameter, area versus diameter, area versus width versus perimeter, sum of diagonals versus width or perimeter, and so on. And I'll mention a few open problems and the state of the art, and we'll finish by a short discussion. So polygons are just, well, polytopes, closed figures, which can be viewed as intersection of half spaces in the Euclidean plane. And among the most common attributes are the perimeter, the area, the diameter, the sum of the lengths of diagonals, and here there's a slight abuse of language. We include the sides in the diagonals, so it would be more precise to say the sum of all distances between pairwise distances between vertices, and then the width. Now, perimeter is just the sum of the lengths of the lines, area is the surface enclosed in the polygon, and sum of diagonals, as I mentioned, is sum of distances between two vertices. Diameter is length of longest diagonal, and width is more difficult to slightly longer to define. You first define the width in a direction. That is, given a direction, the width in a direction is the distance of the perpendicular, the length of the perpendicular to two lines, one above and one below the figure. And then you have to take the minimum, the widths for all directions, and you take the minimum of those widths. And it's easy to see that the width for a polygon is always going to be, the minimum width is going to be parallel to at least one edge. So that's something which we're going to use. Here's the width for this polygon. So the general question which we'll get is, for a given value n, number of vertices of the polygon, which polygon Vn with fixed attributes A has the largest attribute B? We can, of course, take smallest or instead of largest, but we'll stick to largest for the sake of simplicity. So first question, for a given value of n, which convex polygon Vn with unit perimeter has maximum area? This is a very old problem, which was solved by Zenodorus in the 2nd century before Christ. It's not the first problem, not the very first problem. It's the first problem which is well documented and which is on polygons. There's an older problem which, according to Virgil, the Latin poet, occurred when Queen Dido was stranded on the coast of Africa and was allowed to have an amount of land which would fit in an ox skin. And so she cut the skin very thinly and made a long rope and found the best figure, which was a half circle on the side of the sea, and which is supposed to be the site of Carthago, city of Carthago. So that was the first problem. But Zenodorus' problem is nice because it's the first polygonal problem. And he assumes there is a solution, which is not entirely rigorous, and which the existence of a solution was found very, very much later, in the 18th century only, actually. But he does give a way by modifying progressively the figure to show that you can, if you have not the optimal configuration, there are two transformations, and at least one of which applies, which gives you a better solution, and so in the limit you get the solution. Now, for a given value of n, which convex polygon with unit area has maximum perimeter? Well, this shows you that you have some cases in which the answer is trivial. You just take a thinnest polyhedron, so it goes to infinity. Now, here's the table which we will have. We will take our five attributes, put them at one, and try to maximize the other. Okay? And some cases are solved and some cases are open. First, maximize the area for a given perimeter. We just saw that this regular polygon. And we saw that, conversely, maximize the perimeter for a given area is trivial and it gives a flat polygon. Next question, for a given value of n, which convex polygon with unit perimeter has maximum diameter? Again, this curve is trivial, and then gone arbitrary close to the line segment of length 1/2 is the answer. But we get a better question. For a given value of n, which convex polygon with unit diameter has maximum perimeter? Now, if you think about that, the first thing you'll think, well, obviously the regular one must be the answer, but it turns out that there are some surprises in this area. Now, let's first have a look. If we have polygon with an odd number of vertices, so we can have here the regular M gon, and it's the outer pentagon here, we shall in fact use quite often the star polygon, which is obtained by jumping over one edge each time. And this is the regular N gon for N even. Now, what can we see? We can compute the perimeter of the regular N gon. It's easy to see by a little trigonometry that it's 2m sine pi over 2m. And if we look at the perimeter of the regular N gon for N even, we see that PRN is n sine pi divided by n, again by just elementary trigonometry. Now, what this implies that PRM is equal to P2MR when m is odd. In other words, the perimeter for an odd m of a regular polygon is the perimeter for an even n equal to 2m of the regular polygon. So for the regular hexagon, we have a perimeter of three, and sorry, I missed a. Yes. So this implies the following sequence. The perimeter for the foregone is less than for the trigon, which is equal to the hexagon, which is less for the octagon, which is less than the pentagon, which is equal to the decagon, and so on. So we have this strange formula. And a consequence of this is that if you take two consecutive values for six and for you can deform one of the polygons, as we shall see, to get a better one. So let's take a regular hexagon. If we have a regular hexagon with three perimeter of three, we can build a better one. Now, to build a better one, what you can do is introduce take a triangle and try to deform the triangle by adding one vertex more in each side and moving around. The best way to do this is to use what is known as a Reuleaux triangle. Reuleaux polygons in general have been introduced by a German engineer of last century, Franz Reuleaux, and they are obtained in this way. You take a regular polygon, you take a compass, you put one end of the compass on one vertex, and you trace an arc circle on the opposite side. And Reuleaux polygons have some remarkable properties. One of them is that they have equal width in any direction. So if you make a tube, which cross-section is a Reuleaux polygon, and you put a heavy weight on a plank above a few such tubes, it will roll just as if you have a cylinder, you were using cylinders. Now, here we are going to use clipped Reuleaux polygons. That is, we introduce points in the middle of the arcs of the Reuleaux polygon, and then we cut off the segments, the parts of a circle which are limited by the arcs, and we obtain here a clipped Reuleaux polygon. And the perimeter of the clipped Reuleaux polygon is larger than the perimeter of the hexagon, slightly. We're not going to have anything spectacular. I'm not speaking millions of dollars. I'm speaking very small pieces of geometry. Now, you can wonder, is this going to be the best possible solution? It's a better solution, but we have to prove it if it's a better solution, that it is a better solution if it's so. Now, we have, when n is not a power of 2, and for some odd k, and n is 2 to the L k. In other words, n is even but not a power of 2. If n is even not a power of 2, then we can show that the perimeter is bounded by this expression, which corresponds to the Reuleaux polygon. So, in fact, we have the best possible solution except for powers of 2, which are 4, 8, 16, and so on. This is a theorem. That is, the theorem says that in general we have this bound. It's not very difficult to prove by geometry, and the bound is attained. So the bound is attained also for n equal 4, and Reuleaux-based poly. So the only cases which remain are 8, 16, 32, and so forth. Next case is 8. So question, for n equal 8, which convex octagon with unit diameter has maximum area? Now here, we could try to express the problem as a quadratic, non-convex quadratic program. We did try that, and we did try to our software. We tried two softwares. On one hand, we had the QP software, which implements the algorithm of Charles-Audet for non-convex quadratic programming with non-convex quadratic constraints, which was published in 2000 in Math Programming. And the other one is a completely different one. It's due to Frédéric Messin, and it's a general code which is based on interval analysis. We tried both of them, no success. It was just too difficult. So we have to combine our results with and find some necessary conditions. So first necessary condition, which is very easy to see, each vertex VI has another vertex that is equal to the diameter 1. If not, we can pull the vertex out and increase the diameter. So clearly this is a necessary condition for optimality. And then no two diameters are disjoint. That is quite obvious, because if you have two diameters which are disjoint, completely disjoint, not just having one endpoint in common, then taking the diagonals between the endpoints of these diameters, we have at least one segment of line which will be longer than the diameter contradiction. Okay? So for instance, if I had a diameter here and that diameter there, then just taking this line would give me something which is larger than the diameter. Okay. So consequently, then also looking at simple calculations show that the point which has at the endpoint of diameter 1 must be not adjacent to from vertex VI, it must not be adjacent to VI nor the next adjacent. So then we can begin reasoning. And we have a few results which will simplify the problem. These results will give us some configurations of diameters which will allow us to get to solve the problem. First thing, we show that at least one of the four main diagonals is a diameter. So let's assume by contradiction that none of the four diagonals have a length as a diameter. So we put in dotted lines those non-diameters, and full lines diameter. So then V1 must be at the endpoint of a diameter which ends in V4 or V6. Let's say, without loss of generality, that is V4. Then, because two diameters cannot have any point, cannot be disjoint, V5, V8 must not be a diameter. And then, as it cannot be a diameter, we necessarily have V8 joined to V3 by a diameter, because that's the only possibility, and V5 joined to V2 by a diameter. And then we cannot have V1, V6, because it would be disjoint. And we cannot have V4 disjoint from V2, V5. And we cannot have V4, V7, because it would be disjoint from V3, V8. So those two are out. And then we have necessarily to have these two diameters, because it's the only possibility to have a diameter going through V7 or through V6. But these two diameters, V2, V7, V3, V6, are disjoint, contradiction, hence necessarily we have one diameter at least. And going on in this same way, you can show by a rather tedious proof that you can have two diameters, three diameters, four diameters. So all four diameters must belong to the optimal solution. And then we need to study the diameter graph configurations that satisfy this property. That is, we will have some further diameters, possibly or not. We know that there's at least one diameter going through each point, but we might have more. And we will look at those rather systematically. Doing that, we find that we have the regular octagon, which has this perimeter, and we can find an optimal octagon, which has a larger perimeter. Here we did use our global optimization tools for various cases, because the problem got rather complicated. For instance, this is one of the diameter configurations. We enumerated all of them, and this is what we obtained for the solution we thought this was would be the best, so we looked at it first, and then solved it. Some geometry shows you that the roots of this equation, the real root of this equation, gives you the solution. Happily, we have some tools to do that. And analyzing the other diameter configurations, we obtained a series of problems which were expressed as problems involving angles of the star polygons and sines of these angles in this following way, and distances in the following way. as we have some sinusoidal functions, we used the EBBA algorithm of Frédéric-Messin, which, as I mentioned, is based on interval analysis. And it took about 44 hours to get this to solve this to four decimals, so it's not so easy. Some other problems could, some other programs could probably be used here. We've had quite a few. And I remember that for another problem, which I'll speak about later, Chris Rudas told me a few years later, earlier ago, that he had made some tries and that it was quite a bit quicker than what we had. So, we have now solved the problem of maximum perimeter for Rouleau, which is Rouleau polygon for all n, and with and all n with an odd factor, or that is including the odd n as themselves, and we have solved it for 4 and 8. For the case 16 and 32 is just too hard, so that's where we stand. Another problem, which convex polygon with unit area has maximum diameter? So the solution again is trivial, it's a flat polygon, goes to infinity. And then a real problem is, for a given value of n, which convex polygon with unit diameter has maximum area? This problem has been studied quite well in a famous paper by Reinhardt in 1922. Reinhardt was a geometer, a student of a well-known, of a quite famous German geometer, Bieberbach, and he wrote a basic paper which is followed now by people interested in these type of problems, and much of the work is variants on the work of Reinhardt. Reinhardt showed that if n is odd, the optimal solution is a regular polygon, and he showed that it's not the regular polygon if n is even, because if n is even, you can take the regular polygon with one less vertex, add one vertex on one side, and you get a larger value for the area. So taking the regular heptagon, you can add one vertex, say, here, and the surface of the regular heptagon is larger than that of the regular octagon. Now, if the surface, for n equal 4, that's easy. The maximum area is just obtained when you have two diameters which cross. At right angle, and the area is 1/2. For n equals 6, the regular hexagon is this one, and Ron Graham found a better solution, slightly better solution, which is given here. And that was how I got interested in this type of problems. That is, Ron came to Rutgers University. It was close to where he was working at AT&T at the time, and gave a very nice lecture on the use of computers in mathematics. And he mentioned this result, that you could find a better polygon, a polygon with a greater area, an hexagon with a slightly greater hexagon, the area than the hexagon. And he mentioned that as an open problem, next case is 8, 10, and 11, being young and, younger, and full of enthusiasm for global optimization, I went up to Ron and said, "You know, Ron, you know Professor Graham, I think that we could solve this with tools from global optimization for the case of the octagon." He looked at me with a strange stare and said very politely, "Well, yes, that's a good idea, you should try." And we did try, and did it, 10 years later. So the solution for Graham was found by looking at diameter configurations. That is, he used some results which relied on diameter configurations, and in fact he showed that there were 11 possible diameter configurations. These results depend on observations made by Erdős quite a long time ago, and also by Woodall. And diameter configurations turn out to be either caterpillars, that is a path with pending edges, or an odd cycle with adjacent pending edges. So you can find out that there are exactly 11 configurations, and this is configuration number, diameter configuration number 11 of Graham, and Graham also conjectures that you would have one pending edge and a cycle with n minus 1 vertices for larger values which are even and powers of 2. So if you look at the case of the octagon, then instead of having 11 configurations, which are also called diameter configurations, which are also called sometimes scalations, God knows why, and you get all of these. And you can show that now by geometric arguments that there are a certain number of them which are dominated by others. Otherwise, you have to write some programs. And having done all that, you find that the optimal octagon has a solution, an area now which is 0.72 instead of 0.70. That's roughly 2%, 0.02 more than the regular one. And you can find it by finding the real root of this formula, or also by quadratic, non-convex quadratic programming, which is equivalent, and which is how we did it. And then you have to look at all other cases, and you have programs each time, more or less, like these. And the question is open for values of 10, so on. And so I don't know if anybody will come up and say that he can solve 10. I recommend that. So we have one more case which is looked at. Now, the case for a unit diameter and maximum of the sum of diagonals. We have a student who is working on it now, and since last month, you can say that it's n equals 3, 4, 5, and case 6 are solved. We're working on case 7. And one thing which is curious is that the polygon folds, and we get as optimal solution either a triangle where you have an equal number of vertices here. For instance, for an hexagon, an optimal hexagon will be two vertices here, two vertices here, two vertices here, and a triangle, and then it goes like that, arbitrarily close to a triangle. And or, for some other values, we have what is known as a Tambakis polynomial, because Nicolaus Tambakis showed that this was optimal for the case of n equal 4, and you have a regular triangle and one pending edge, pending diameter like this. And it seems to be the case that for all values of n less than 45, you have this for one case out of 3, this for two cases out of 3, and then finally always this as optimal solution. We don't know exactly how to prove that. For the maximum width, it was solved by already a long time ago by Reinhardt. Minimum diameter, maximum width was solved by Reinhardt, and we solved for n equal 4, and we have been able to solve it for all cases except for 8, 16, 32, and so on. And then there are quite a few problems which are trivial and quite a few problems which remain open. And we can define a variant of this problem, which is the case in which you add the constraint that all sides have the equal lengths. This is not sufficient for ensuring that the regular polygons are the optimal ones. All those problems are more constraints. And some of Rouleau's results apply also. Here there is a result which is known as the octagon of Winkler's wife. Why is that so? Well, Stephen Winkler, who was a Hungarian mathematician, a Hungarian statistician, Winkler. Well, he wrote a paper on this problem in 1950, and he wanted to know if the regular octagon would be the optimal one. He observed it was not, and at the footnote of his paper says, I am grateful for this example to my wife. And that's all we know about Minx's wife. But unfortunately, Minx's wife, Dr. Gunn, is not optimal. So here are results for the regular octagon with max, as a perimeter of 306. Equal sides has a perimeter of 3395, and unequal sides has perimeter 3121. Okay, and these are the diameter configurations of all those. So we have also with constant sides a set of power cases which are solved and more cases which are open. So to conclude, well, we looked at some, here I looked at two families of problems and briefly mentioned some others. There are quite a few others. They are challenging. They represent a general trend, I think, in discrete geometry, which is more and more the use of computers is needed to get to the optimal solutions. For instance, if you take the famous circle packing problem, packing circles in a square, when it was up to 9 circles, pure geometric reasoning was used and was able to get the optimal solution and prove its optimality. From 10 onwards, and now we are at 30, or at least at 30, the computer was used and sophisticated algorithms of global optimization, of which several people participated. Panos and Chris had a paper with Maranias on that, and also quite a few, Tibor Xendes did a lot of work, and Marcos and others. So this is a good challenge, say, for codes. When we try to do these problems, it helped us for our codes also, because we found out that there were some problems which for which the codes would fail or would take an enormous amount of time because we would have some outer approximations, for instance, which were very, very, very close to the optimum, and there would be some numerical instability. Also, people in nonlinear programming use some versions of these problems to get to test problems which are very complicated. And some of the codes, I will not mention which, do get the optimal solution, some don't, and some get a much worse solution than that they used at the beginning. Okay, so that's basically the conclusions. There are a number of papers. There's a survey paper which will appear in Jogu anytime soon, and there are 3 papers in Journal of Commutative Theory A and some other reports in JLAD. And so it's fun. So if you want to have fun, that's the only justification, the main justification. Thank you.